When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 106, The Last Maya Kingdom, part 2. Before starting today, I just wanted to mention a couple of things. First of all, a quick reminder that the first Friends of the Podcast episode is available now. It covers the mysterious Andean civilization of Tiwanaku, a people who predate the Inca, who built a magnificent city high up on the Altiplano, but who we know very little about. This month's episode will be out soon as well. It's about the life of Bartolomeu de las Casas, a man who campaigned for indigenous rights during the early years of the Spanish Empire, and made himself a lot of enemies doing so. He is a very interesting character, one who almost seems to have been born at the wrong time. A lot of the arguments he made sound like they could have been made today, and not 500 years ago. Yet he has his critics. If you're interested in getting access to these, and each future episode, there's information in the episode description about how to sign up. So secondly, I want to apologise for taking so long to get this episode out. It was only a few weeks ago I was saying that I was going to try and stick to a weekly schedule. I'm travelling in Latin America at the moment, and my computer and phone were stolen. Incidentally, one of the things that first comes to mind when people think of Latin America is often danger and crime. This is the first time I've ever had any proper issues of this nature while travelling, and I've travelled there a lot. This was done by another traveller, not by a local. I had 3 episodes written, including this one, and so I've had to write them all over again. That's why it's taken me so long to release part 2 of this mini-series. By coincidence, given the subject of this episode, I have found myself in the Yucatan, something I hadn't planned when I started writing these episodes on the Itzah. I'm rewriting and recording this in Mérida, the city from which the conquest of Petén was launched. You might remember the Montejo family from the series on the initial conquest of the Yucatan. Well, a couple of days ago, I visited the house which they built and lived in. It's a large building on the central square, which apparently occupied a whole block originally, but has had bits sold off over the centuries. While the inside is impressive and grand, all but the facade of the house date to later times, so it's difficult to get a sense of what it would have felt like in those early years. Although, perhaps it may have looked much as it did when the events of this episode were taking place. Apparently the Montejo family owned the building until the 1800s. Their legacy is still very much recognised here in Mérida. There are streets, hotels and restaurants named after them. Let's get on with the episode. Last time we gave some background on the Itzah, their movement or possible return from the Yucatan to the remote Petén region, which is now part of Guatemala. This was probably in response to Spanish attacks, but it was also, probably at least partially, inspired due to the pre-Hispanic threat posed by their rivals in the League of Mayapan. We looked at the city they built on an island in Lake Petén Itzá, as well as at some of the other Maya ruins in the area. Today we tell the story of how, 170 years after the fall of Tenochtitlan, and about 150 after the end of the main part of the conquest of the Yucatan, this outpost of independence came under Spanish control. We saw during those episodes on the conquest of the Yucatan how difficult it had been for the Spanish to take charge of the region. The fierce Maya resistance, the challenging geography of thick jungle, and a lack of drinking water had combined to make the conquest a long, drawn-out affair. It was because of this that they had neglected to bother with Petén, judging it too hard and probably not worth the effort. The Yucatan was still a relatively remote and unimportant part of the empire, so it was presumed that Petén would be the same. On the other side of Petén, however, was Guatemala. This was an important place to the Spanish. It, along with much of the rest of Central America, had become part of the Viceroyalty of New Spain, ruled from Mexico City. Guatemala had become the de facto seat of power for this vast sub-region of the Viceroyalty. The only way to get between the Yucatan and Guatemala was by going the long way around, through today's Mexican states of Tabasco and Chiapas. It was decided that to better integrate the region and to encourage trade which might enrich both Yucatan and Guatemala, these territories should be connected. There were other reasons. Spanish priests eyed the souls of the unconquered and unchristian independent Maya. And in the background, there were vague fears that the British might try to take control of the area and establish a foothold in this part of the Americas. British pirates and privateers, some state-sponsored, were very active along the Caribbean coast, and later on, they would take control of neighbouring Belize and extend their influence along the coastline of Central America. So there was some justification for these fears. Britain won't play a part in this story, however. The plan was to build a road between Yucatan and Guatemala. Settlements would surely follow, as well as missions established by the priests. But for now, it was enough to build this road and to ensure that the region it passed through was pacified enough to make it safe to travel. This, of course, led to competition. Yucatan and Guatemala were to start building this road from their capitals, but under whose jurisdiction would Petén ultimately fall? The man who currently governed Yucatan was determined that it would be his. Martín de Azúa was an extremely ambitious man who saw the perfect chance to advance his career through the conquest of Petén. His predecessor conquistadors, 150 to 250 years before, had done very well for themselves by adding new territories and peoples to Spanish control. We've seen this in previous episodes. By this point, however, that era was largely over. Conquest was no longer the obvious route to personal advancement, simply because opportunities to conquer were largely few and far between. It had mostly been done already. Here, though, was a golden opportunity. Azúa was a Basque from a prominent family. His family knew how to play the game, and in the late feudal world they inhabited, where nobility was paramount, and those noble families married each other to preserve or improve their status and create connections, his family had done just that. His uncle by marriage, for example, had been the viceroy of New Granada, modern-day Colombia, Ecuador, and Venezuela. Birth allowed you the opportunity to play the game, but Azúa wanted to win it and make a name for himself. He had arrived in the Americas about a decade before, working as a lawyer in Mexico City and building a network of connections. This network included people with interests in the Yucatan, and probably helped him to win the position as its governor. He moved here to Merida to take up the job and plan his conquest of Petén. The Itza and their neighbouring independent states, like the Kowo, were not ignorant of external developments, despite relying on their remoteness for protection. They kept a close eye on what was going on at the edges of Spanish territory, and planned how to respond. Their leadership, however, was not united. Wherever there is power, there is usually a power struggle. There was the long-standing rivalry with the Kowo, for one thing. Then there was disagreement among the Itza nobility about what official policy should be towards the Spanish. The Itza ruler was named Ahor Khan Ek, and he had a nephew named Ach Chan. It seems that Ahor Khan Ek was willing to talk to the Spanish if their help might cement his control of the Itza kingdom and displace his rivals. Ach Chan was even more happy to talk to the Spanish. He went to Merida and said that the Itza kingdom was ready to accept them as rulers. He was even baptized. What the Spanish didn't realize was that Ach Chan had no authority to do this. They believed for a short time that they would now be able to march peacefully to Lake Petén Itza, and that no war would be necessary. After a while, though, the Spanish realized the situation, but they kept Ach Chan around. He could provide useful information, and his high position in Itza society might give them influence in future negotiations. While Ahor Khan Ek was not willing to give up power, as Ach Chan had said he was, he did want to talk. And so when he sent a delegation to Merida, Ach Chan was used as an interpreter, and to show them how much he liked and trusted the Spaniards. Afterwards, he was asked to explain what the visit might mean and what the Itza might be thinking. The next move was made by the Spanish. The priests of the Yucatan were desperate to convert the Maya of Petén, and as Asua wanted to learn more about the Itza, one of these priests, Andrés de Avendaño, was sent to visit Nox Petén. Of course, the road had not been built yet. It was in its earliest stages and did not extend far out of Yucatan territory, so getting there involved a long walk through the jungle. At a village in the northern part of the Itza kingdom, they were welcomed in. Although the population were friendly, Avendaño wrote that they were overly interested in the gifts Asua had sent with him, and although he had offered them a few, he was unable to prevent them from helping themselves to the majority. He puts this down to the Maya being an uneducated culture compared to the Spanish, but it may be that they knew exactly what they were doing. It is possible that the village leader, an Itza noble and relative of Ahor Khan Ek, was opposed to peace with the Spaniards, and by misunderstanding and taking the gifts, he was doing what he could to weaken Avendaño's chance of impressing Ahor Khan Ek. With few remaining gifts to present, he would look stingy and weak. When Avendaño reached the lake, he was taken straight to meet the leader, even sharing a canoe across the lake to Nox Petén with him. He wrote that he was distrustful of the Itza leader and worried about his intentions, but that he had decided that his best course of action would be to act brave and unafraid. Soon after arriving in the city, he read out a very long letter to the council, signed by Asua, which with its length, formal Spanish style, and his incomplete ability to speak Itza, apparently bored them so much that he was forced to abandon it and have a normal conversation with them. Over the coming days, Avendaño realized that Ahor Khan Ek was not intending to trick him, and that he was open to hearing about the Spanish Empire and religion. They spent much time talking, and were able to build up some kind of relationship. He had managed to keep hold of the most important gifts Asua had sent, a fancy Spanish suit, and a staff which was given to regional indigenous governors as a sign of office. The idea was that these would be a kind of symbol of his future conversion, from independent ruler to Spanish client or regional governor of the area. On Avendaño's last day in Nochbeten, Ajor Canek appeared in front of the population, wearing his new gifts. He received an angry reaction. The population were clearly not willing to accept accommodation with the Spanish, and they thought that their ruler had been bought off with a simple set of clothing and a stick. Avendaño decided to step in and tried to calm the crowd. Bizarrely, he made a reference to how the Emperor Moctezuma had accepted Spanish rule, which must have made little sense to these people, who had never been connected to the Aztec Empire, and as it was almost 2 centuries later, it's difficult to know if they would have even heard of him.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He then went on to make another mistake, implying that Ajor Canek had agreed to accept Spanish rule over the Itza, something which he had not, even if their discussions had been friendly and positive. The next day when he left, Ajor Canek was in a much weaker position, and his enemies amongst the nobility were ready to undermine him in any way they could. In hindsight, if there ever had been a possibility of accepting Spanish rule peacefully, this may have been the moment where that became politically impossible for the Itza leader. One thing that rebellious nobility could do was make Avendaño's journey home more difficult. 2 of them tried to convince him to go via their village, where Avendaño believes he would have been attacked and killed. Instead, he left during the night for security, but he still ended up in a village once he had reached the mainland, whose inhabitants he believed were hostile. He managed to leave unharmed, but was directed to go a strange route through thick jungle, and he almost didn't survive. He got lost, and he only happened to be discovered by chance after a month of wandering. Ursúa decided to take a more forceful approach at this point, and to try to speed the conquest up. The road was still making progress, and so the troops he had sent to guard the people working on it were slowly getting closer to Nochbeten. Skirmishes were starting to break out, as the Spanish sent small groups of soldiers ahead to scout, while local Itza leaders sent soldiers of their own, claiming to be hunters or farmers, to keep an eye on what was going on. One of these Spanish advanced parties reached the shore of the lake, where a fight broke out. Quite a few died on both sides, with only a couple of Spaniards making it back. At this point, Ak-Chan, perhaps realizing that a peaceful outcome was not going to happen, and that he was, after all, an Itza, slipped away from Mérida and rejoined his family in Nochbeten. The uptick in conflict was probably going to happen regardless, as the road from the Yucatan reached further into Petén. Ursúa, though, had other reasons for expediting things. The race against Guatemala. It was the Guatemalans who had the first small successes at incorporating minor territories on the very edge of Petén into the Spanish Empire, and thus into their governorship. Now a group of their soldiers reached the lake. For the 2 Spanish governorships, knowing what the other side was doing was difficult, as communication was bad, hence the need for the road, so he didn't know the details, but Asua was aware of this. The idea of Guatemalans reaching the lake in relatively large numbers would have sounded alarming to a man who wanted to be the one to conquer Petén and to make it part of the Yucatan. In truth, though, the Guatemalan expedition was not an easy or successful one. They experienced heavy rains on their way there, which slowed them down significantly. The advanced party went missing, so the rest of the men were obliged to look for them. They found evidence on the lake shore that they had been there, and then they were engaged by a group of Itza. The Itza seemed friendly and wanted to take them to Nok Petén in their canoes. Having had plenty of contact with the Spanish before, they were also familiar with their guns and horses. While still potentially useful, these would not be frightening and new to the Itza. The Guatemalans concluded that this was a trap, and they refused to board the canoes. They waited until late into the night to see if there was any sign of the lost Spaniards, but concluded that they had been killed by the Itza, and so they retreated. They decided that having seen the Itza capital, they didn't have the numbers to make any attack. They were apparently haunted by drumming and shouts during the night on the way back, and they were too paranoid to stop in any villages. They had trouble transporting their supplies, with many of the mules dying from snake bites. Finally, they were hit by a hurricane, although they don't really mention how bad the damage from this was. They decided to start building a fort on the edge of Guatemalan territory, but soon they would give up with even that. It looked like the race to conquer Petén was starting to get serious, but it was about to come to an abrupt end. A new governor was assigned to Guatemala, one who seemed to put his loyalty to Mexico City above his ambitions for his own governorship. Rather than having two parts of the same viceroyalty compete against each other, he decided to abandon any attempt to take Petén and leave it to Asua and the Yucatan Spanish. It was now clear that a conflict was about to take place between Asua and the Itza. The road had almost reached the lake, meaning not just that it was encroaching into Itza territory, but also an army could now march down it. Ahorcanek's lack of aggressive leadership was undermining his authority, and so the skirmishes were increasing as the Cahuach and sub-rulers of the Itza were taking things into their own hands, attacking Spaniards more and more. Asua started gathering an army to attack Nok Petén, following it down to command the assault personally. He set up camp on the peninsula of Nishtun, that ancient grid-based town which we looked at last episode. I mentioned the fall of Tenochtitlan at the beginning of this episode. This was mainly to illustrate how long the Itza had remained independent, but I also wanted to bring to mind how that conquest of the Aztec capital was achieved. Both it and Nok Petén were on islands in lakes, and when deciding how to overcome this protective barrier, Asua was clearly influenced by Cortés's methods. There, boats had been built to bombard Tenochtitlan and to transport soldiers across. It was the only way the city could be reached without too much loss of life on the narrow causeways which linked it to the mainland. Asua decided to do the same. He ordered a ship be built, more like something which the Spaniards would use to cross the ocean and sail down a river. While this was being done, the Itza were constant visitors. Sometimes they came aggressively, others feigned friendliness in order to get close and try targeted attacks with their bows and arrows against Spanish leaders. Asua believed that they hoped to provoke him to leave his camp and chase them, and in doing so he would give up all the defensive advantages he had if he stayed still. They had built a wooden wall around the camp before starting the boat. He also believed that a peaceful surrender might still be possible, and kept trying to offer visitors jewellery, salt, and axes as gifts. When the ship was finished, it was capable of carrying cannons, and Asua's plan was to bombard Nok Biten from the safety of the ship. On the day he was preparing to launch the attack, a final delegation arrived to see if peace could be made. It even included Ak Jan. There was no getting past the fundamental deadlock, though. Although Ahor Chan-ek might have been willing to accept Spanish rule, the political situation would not allow it. Too much of the nobility and of the population itself was too fiercely opposed. For their part, the Spanish would not accept anything less than control of Biten, achieved in some form or another. There are two stories about the battle for Nok Biten. The first is the one given by Asua himself, and one which is pretty much the same was written by another Spanish soldier who took part in the battle. According to them, their ship sailed across the lake, scattering the canoes manned by warriors as it passed. They began firing the cannons at the archers arranged on the rooftop of the town. Despite close to 200 years of fierce resistance and a clear determination not to accept Spanish rule now, the Itzar gave up surprisingly easily. The battle was quite quick, and the Itzar leadership ran over to the other side of the island before attempting to escape by swimming across to the mainland. There are a few other accounts of the battle, which were written roughly 10 or so years later. These authors were not present, but they say they spoke to people who were. According to them, the battle was much longer, fiercer, and more brutal. The Itzar did not give up easily, and Asua used harsh measures to win. It's hard to know what exactly happened. First-hand accounts are better than direct ones, but everyone had political reasons to tell the story they chose to tell. Yucatan politics would be quite fractious in the coming years, with lots of disputes, power struggles, and, well, politicking. Those who wrote the later accounts were Asua's enemies, and so they may have wanted to discredit him. He himself, of course, would want to paint himself in the best light. While we have seen lots of excesses committed by conquistadors go unpunished, we have seen some called before courts to answer for their actions. If he behaved a way which risked this outcome during the conquest of Nok Biten, you can see why his account would omit that. You can also see how alleging crimes committed during the battle might be a way to attack him and his reputation. In the end, none of it affected the progress of Asua's career, which, it is clear, is what he cared about the most. Later he would be made Viceroy of the Philippines, one of the most prestigious positions in the Spanish Empire, and probably one achieved largely on the back of his conquest of Biten. Interestingly, once he'd gained the glory of conquest, the actual purpose of it didn't seem that important to him. The road, which he had put all that effort into building, fell into disrepair pretty quickly, especially the northern section from the Yucatan. Although organized Maya resistance was over with the fall of the Itzar, the area was still very remote, and many Maya didn't accept Spanish rule, it seemed. Travelers were at constant risk of being attacked by bands of indigenous people. Asua didn't seem very bothered with sorting that out. Soon he was petitioning Mexico City and saying that Biten was too remote to be governed from the Yucatan. It should, he argued, be given to Guatemala. In the end it was agreed that in matters of religion the priests of the Yucatan would remain in charge, but politically it would be governed by Guatemala. After all that competition, he seemed pretty happy to just give up his new conquests. It's because of this that Biten is today part of Guatemala and not Mexico. The Maya will continue to revolt. We will come back to tell some of those stories at later dates. After conquering the Itzar and Nok Biten, however, the Spanish quickly subdued the rest of the independent Maya states, like the Kowo, and there wouldn't be an independent Maya kingdom again. If you've enjoyed this episode, and you wanted to do something to help out, one thing which really makes a difference is leaving a review wherever you get your podcast from. It really helps new people to discover the show. Thank you to everyone who's done this already, and thanks to all of you for listening. You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and produced by me, Max Argent, edited by Alex McNamara. If you want to become a friend of the podcast and gain access to a bonus episode each month, as well as helping to support the running of the show, there's a link with information about how to do this in the episode description. The podcast can also be found on Facebook and Twitter by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. Here, I post updates about new episodes, as well as interesting articles I find about Latin American history. Thank you for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.